Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm on a very tight schedule. We're going to be finished at 10:29. Maybe even 10:28. We're on page 70. For those that would like to look along in our packet, we're continuing where we left off in the 12th chapter, Perek Yud Bet and Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph. We saw last week how Shmuel began, who was the Navi, the prophet, for all the Jewish people at that time, that he was about to really lay it in on them, give them a lot of rebuke, a lot of serious lecturing, heavy-duty mussar. And we saw that before he did that, he began to brag, if you want to use those words. He said, you know, I never took any oxen from you, I never took any animals. And we said the reason for that is before a person is able to be an effective individual who is able to tell people what to do, it's necessary first to raise himself above everyone else to show that, in fact, he practices what he preaches. Now we're going to see exactly what's bothering the prophet of Samuel so much. What did they really do that was so bad after all? We'll see that it has something to do with the appointing of the first king of the Jewish people, specifically Shaul. So we're up to verse 9, or Pasuk Tet, which is on page 70. The previous Psukim gave us the history lesson that we were in Egypt, Mitzrayim, and Moshe and Aharon took us out. Bless you, yes. And the message that we saw, the significance of why we, of course, we know Moses took us out of Egypt, everyone knows that. But the significance is that at that point, when we were in dire straits, we were in tremendous trouble, we were slaves, we were being beaten up and whipped by our masters, we never said, oh, we need a king. We only turned to Hashem. And therefore, this is really a message as it's going to continue and say, throughout history, when we needed something, when we were in different difficulty, we never said, oh, we need a king. Because we have a king, we have Hashem. And therefore, that's what Shmuel is telling them, that you should never have pushed me and pressured me to do this, because I had no choice but to listen to you. And sometimes that's what leaders have to do. They have to make choices because there's so many people that are forcing them into something. Even though the king or whoever it is knows it's not what's best for the country or for the firm or for a school. But they have no choice. And Shmuel also had no choice but to allow that there's a king. So now we're going to continue to see the very powerful words of Shmuel. Again, Pasuk Tet, verse 9. Vayishku as Hashem Elokeichem. You guys forgot God. You forgot that there was a God. That doesn't mean completely they didn't remember that there was a God, but it means the intense relationship, the unique relationship, that when we would have a problem, we would turn to God. They didn't do that. Vayimcharo sam biyad Sisera. What happened? We were sold, literally, into the hands of Sisera, which means we were slaves to him. Sartzava Chatzor, Viad Pelishtim. We were in the hands as well of the Pelishtim, as we read about how they defeated us, stole our Aron, the Holy Ark, killed many people. We finally were able to get it back and had an impressive war against them. Viad Melech Moav, also other nations like the king of Moab, Vilchamuba. Also, when it came to that king, they also did battle against them as well. So we were constantly in war. We were not in times of peace, which is obviously not a good thing. However, that's something which we couldn't control. People are attacking us. We can't control that. The litmus test is how we react to those difficult situations. So Shmuel says, as we're going to see in the commentaries, You did the right thing back then. Verse Yud, Pasuk Yud, Bidzaku El Hashem. What did you do? You only cried out not to ask for a king, but you cried out to God. V'yomru, and you said, Chatanu, we've sinned, we've made mistakes. Kiyazavnu as Hashem, we realized that we made mistakes, we distanced ourselves, we've forsaken God. V'navod es habalim ves ashtarot, and we went and we worshipped the balim and ashtarot, which are different types of idols, gods with a lowercase g. V'ata now, hatzilenu miyad oyvenu v'navdeka. Now, please save us from the hands of our enemies, v'navdeka, and we will be avadim. We'll be servants to you. We'll do whatever you want, God. We'll be indebted to you if you can only save us from our enemies. That's what you used to say. That's not what you said recently, which we're going to get to. Now, we look for a moment in the Mitzudat David, which is on the very bottom of the page. What does it mean, v'yazaku, which means they screamed out, uncontrollable, means hispalu Hashem, which in itself is a very important lesson. Tefillah, davening, is not just lip service. It's supposed to be v'yazaku. V'yazaku, as it's translated, as they cried out, because that's what tefillah is really supposed to be. It's supposed to be meaningful. It's supposed to be an avodah shebaleh. It's supposed to come from within. It's supposed to be something which really changes you and brings out all of your the innermost emotions within yourself. That's what hispalu is. Tefillah is v'yazaku, is crying. That's the ultimate level of davening, of tefillah. Which, as some explain, as we're in the middle of this Mesudas David, because we're so close to Rosh Hashanah, they say the significance of the shofar, the different sounds, the tekiah, the shvarim, the turah, whether it's one long sound, three shorter sounds, or nine very quick sounds, they say that that's actually represents, does anyone know what that represents, who it was or what it represents? It represents what? Well, there's certain, that's true also. That's true. Some actually say that it represents crying. Crying specifically of a mother, of the mother of Sisera, which we just read about. Biad Sisera, we just read in the previous Pasuk Tet. Sisera was an enemy against the Jewish people. Sisera eventually was killed in a very dramatic way by a woman by the name Yael. But nonetheless, she realized at a certain point she would always wait for her son after his tough day at work, not in the office, in a cubicle, but with a sword. She would always wait for him at the end of the day and say, "Oh, how you doing, son? How many people did you kill today? Oh, that's nice. Here's some soup." That's how she would always spend her day. And she realized at a certain point her son wasn't coming back, which probably meant he's never coming back. And it says that she began to cry. She began to wail, a tremendous, bitter cry. And it's based on her cries is the connection to the sounds of the shofar.
That or the 100 sounds? The
different sounds correspond to the different sounds of Sisera's mother when she was crying. And, yeah. What?
How our shofar on Rosh Hashanah can represent such a horrible person who was so evil and was only hoping that he raped other women and was doing that instead of coming home or
right.
spreading the spoils, dividing them. And I thought it was very upsetting.
To me, it's a very valid question that of all things, the shofar, which represents Kedusha and sanctity of the Jewish people, it represents one of the worst Rishayim of all mankind. But to me, I consider that a very empowering concept. And the reason is, when it comes to Yom HaDin, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's for those who take it as they should, in a serious manner, you can say, you know, these great people that they spend their whole day involved in Torah and good deeds, right, they're okay, but for me, I mean, I'm busy doing all. I don't. Who am I? who am I? How am I able to really do tshuva? How is my prayers, how are they going to actually make a powerful impact? And I believe the message is the shofar of Sisera's mother. That even a person who is as wicked as Sisera, the tears of that mother have such profound power that it could change even a person who has the worst gezar din. That they're already guaranteed, signed, sealed, delivered, their lives are over. But the cries of even from a Rasha or from a mother who's also obviously wicked, apple probably didn't fall from the tree, but that had such a tremendous impact, even for someone who is so wicked. So for ourselves, on Rosh Hashanah, that's, to me, it's a very empowering feeling. That if I can listen to the shofar, and I can take my davening, my tefillos seriously, then God willing, I should also be zocha to a proper yom din. So I think it's, on the surface, it's certainly bothersome. But to me, I look at it as a very empowering thing. That even when it comes to the rush of the worst person, that's the shofar. The power of tshuva is even the most wicked individual. And therefore, we also have that opportunity to change as well. That's how I understood it. I had that question. I spoke to a lot of different rabbis. That's how it has meaning to me. There are, of course, other explanations. I've heard other answers as well, but that's the one which is the most meaningful to me. But that's the idea of the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. And that's what V'yizaku is. The crying in tefillah and praying is such an incredible power, such an incredible impact. And that's, God willing, the proper feelings a person should have on this year, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, on first day of Shabbos, to hear the shofar and to think of that mother crying. The different sounds, which means uncontrollable bitter tears. That's how moved we're supposed to be as well during the davening. And that's what the tefillah, the sound, and the sound of the shofar is supposed to arouse within ourselves. Let's continue with the Mesudas David. Mesudas David said, V'yizaku means hispal Hashem. That, what does it mean they cried? Crying means, that's what the right way of praying is through crying. Aval, but here's the key of the Mesudas David, which I wanted to get to. We're still on the bottom of page 70. Lo sholahem melech lilchom milchamtem. What did they not ask? They did not say, you know what, let's get a committee, let's hire some good generals, let's get a good king, and let's knock these guys off ourselves. We realize that we as a nation are small and weak in comparison to these huge nations of Sisera and Moab and the Plishtim. Just based on nature, Teva, we would be destroyed. But fortunately, we have a very important secret weapon on our side, that's God. And therefore, when it came to our troubles, we never asked for a king. That was not the Jewish way. Rather, it was Hispal Hashem. We asked Hashem to intervene. And we'll discuss the reason why it's not necessarily such a good thing to have a king, and why, again, the Torah does say that there's a mitzvah to have a king. Perhaps they're for different reasons. So that was the message that Shmuel was saying. We never did this before. When we had problems, you didn't have to appoint a king. That's a radical thing. You didn't have to do that. Continue on the next page, 72, Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'yishlach Hashem es Yerubal v'yaz Bedon v'yaz Yiftach v'yaz Shmuel. And Hashem sent these different people, some of them we've never heard of before, very uncommon names, such as Yerubal, which the Mesudas Sion says that's actually a more famous person, which is the top left side. Yerubal is Gidon, which is learned in Sefer Shoftim, Book of Judges, as he was one of the Shoftim. The Asbedon, who's done? What Bidon? What is, who is Bidon? So the Asbedon, it says. What does that mean? Right. So the Mesudas Sion says, Ben Dun. And who's, how does that help me? Who's that? So the Mesudas Sion says, Zesh Shimshon. That's referring to Samson, Mibnei Dun. So, we have to, that's your homework for next week.
Actually, the Kever of Shimshon is right near the Kever of Dan. It's right at Beit Shemesh. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So that. Yeah, I don't, the question is, what has B'nai done? I'm not sure. So you'll look that up? Okay, great. That's your homework assignment. All right. Good. So Hashem sent all these great people to help you. None of these guys are kings. Gideon, who was the shofet, but he was a leader that helped you in the times of trouble. I gave you a guy with beautiful locks of hair by the name of Shimshon. Another guy named Yiftach HaGiladi, which is also in the shoftim. He's famous for, these people have their own little stories, which are pretty famous. And Shmuel. I gave him some heavy hitters over here. V'yatzel eschem miyado yveichem misovid. You didn't need a king. They alone were able to save you from your enemies, with my help, of course. V'teishu betach. And with the help of these great leaders, either Nevi'im, prophets, or shoftim, judges, you were being able to be saved, and you were able to dwell and live in security. Now, Rashi, there's a few explanations exactly why these four. Why did he cluster these four? He could have said a bunch of other great leaders. Why are these the ones that are singled out? Right? Why do you have to single out these guys? So if we look at the Rashi over here, which is on page 72 on the second line, Es Yiftach. Hari Shlosha, if you look at the first three, which is Yerubal, Dan, and Yiftach, which, as we said, is Gidon, Shimshon, and Yiftach, which are, I would say, are heavy hitters. Rashi says, not really. Hari Shlosha, Kali Olam. These are three guys that are really lightweights in comparison to others. Im Shlosha Chamuri Olam. You can't even compare them to the other three. Now, it only mentions four. It mentions those three guys, namely Gidon, Shimshon, and Yiftach. And then it says, and Shmuel. Shmuel is in a category unto himself. Shmuel, elsewhere, we compare him to Moshe and Aharon. So he said these three guys, of namely Gidon, Shimshon, and Yiftach, are really lightweights in comparison to the great individuals, namely Moshe, Aharon, and Shmuel. Okay? So what is Rashi doing? Trying to make fun of them and say that they were real? You want a leader? This is a real good leader. These guys are nothing. No. Rashi says, Lomachot's come to teach us a very important concept, which sometimes is very difficult for people, especially those who have experienced and seen great leaders in their time. That's exactly what it's going to say, right. Hakel bedoro, kichomer bedoro. The people that perhaps in one generation, if you would look at the entire spectrum of all leaders from beginning of creation until today, some of them are greater than others. However, they are all considered, should be considered in your eyes, as though they are Chomer Bedoro, the great people. That Kol Beis Din Hamitama Al Hador, that any court or any person who is a leader over a generation, Sarch Leilech Acharav, you have to follow them, Kilu Hu Avir Shevavirim, even if, as though they are the greatest of all time. Because, after all, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago in the Torah, Uvael HaShofet Asher Hayav Yomim Haheim, you should go to the judge in your day. And Rashi says, you only have the people that are in your day. You can't say, I remember the good old days. The good old days, you had powerful leaders, people that know stuff. People nowadays, they don't know nothing. I'm not going to listen to them. No, you have to entrust the leaders in your generation. Correct. They may not, if you would have them both, give them both an SAT, Moshe Rabbeinu would probably get a 2400. They changed it. It used to be 1600. He'd get a 2400. And Nebuchadnezzar, Gidon, and Shimshon, they'd probably get like 2350s. It would be embarrassing, you know. So only 99th percentile. So you're right. They don't have the same level. But in that generation, they're the greatest, and therefore they should be treated with the respect. You have to listen to them regardless of who they are. And therefore, this is the message he was saying. It's like, okay, fine. Why did you want to appoint a king? The reason they want to appoint a king is they said, listen, Shmuel, you're an old guy, even though he's only 50. They said, you're an old guy, man. That's what he said. You're old. And they said, and your kids are rotten. And I don't want them to be the leaders to take over your position. And we need a king. That's what they said. So Shmuel's saying, okay, maybe my children wouldn't have been the best to take over my position, but that doesn't mean you have to have a king. We could have had someone else. And granted, they might not have been as prominent as me or other leaders, but you should have still have done that better than having appointed a king. Because if there's no person, if there's a vacancy, you have to take that vacancy. As the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says, in a place where there's no ish, where there's no person, you have to put forth the effort to be that person. You have to do whatever it takes to be that person. Even if you don't think you're qualified, but if there's no one else for that position, you're the man.
Were these arguments ever submitted before Shaul was appointed? I mean, Hashem basically gave him pretty easily for what he recalls. So were these arguments ever submitted to the people before their time?
No.
See, we have to the fact, really.
Yeah.
Started now with saying.
Right. I mean, basically, they knew that he heard this. He was very upset when they wanted a king. And he immediately turned to Hashem, and God said, they're not rebelling against you, they're rebelling against me. And they said, go tell them all the different things that a king has to do. Like, they'll take your kids, there's a mandatory draft, there's a quartering act, they'll come to your house, they'll take your food, they'll tax you. And that's what he said. And they said, we don't care. We still want a king. That was all we saw. But you're right. He didn't really lay into them that's really wrong until this point. And the question is why it's a little too late. The additional issue is that when the king was chosen, they didn't all accept him. They didn't all think that Saul was the right king. So what really bothered Shmuel was, you're so wishy-washy, you're so much on the fence. Do you want a king? You don't want a king. Like, so it'd be one thing if, fine, I don't agree to it, but you want a king, fine. But then all of a sudden you have half the people that change their mind and they're, you know, so that's another reason why he's very upset and adamant that people should understand his position at this point, because there was such tension until the war, which caused unity. And now, of course, as we're discussing, we mentioned beginning of this chapter, there's unification now. But you're right, that's what he's addressing at this point. Okay, now, so the Rashi mentioned again, no matter what generation you are in, you have to accept those people. That's how Rashi interpreted this verse. And even if there are people that weren't as qualified, it's necessary that you have to have those, you should still fill in that position, which is always a very important lesson, which we talked about maybe a few months ago, that persons, you know, there's a vacancy in a certain position, perhaps in the synagogue, or someone who wants to do a leadership position in the community. That's not for me. I'm not as qualified. I can't do that. I can't do it. It's too difficult. So I explained a few months ago the story of a king, as we mentioned, about this guy that he loved the best water. Right? And I said a few months ago about he used to always enjoy drinking the water Avion, right? Which, if you read it backwards, it's naive, right? Because it costs like $3. Who's going to buy a bottle of water for $3? That'd be naive. So he always wanted the most expensive water. So he went to his servant, and he told the servant, who's new on the job, first day, he said, I want water. So he went to a well, which was right there, and he got some water, and you can see all this bacteria and fungus floating on the top, kind of gross. He said, here you go, king. And he looked at it, he goes, this is disgusting. Don't you know that I only want the best, most delicious, pure water? How could you give this to me? He goes, I'm sorry. He goes, the water that I want is 3 miles away, and you have to go to this special well, and only over there, that's the water I want. So he goes, fine, no problem. I'll listen to you, king. And then, unfortunately, later that night, there was a huge fire in the palace. And this guy was on doing the graveyard shift. And he needed to get this fire out. And this was before, you know, you can just pick up your cell phones. You know, there's no cell phones back then, I don't think. How'd they survive? I don't know, but there's no cell phones. So he realized, what do I need to take out a fire to extinguish the fire? I need water! So he ran as fast as he could 3 miles down the road to where this pure, terrific water is, and he got some of it, and he was so heavy and so far, he finally made it back. The entire palace was burned down, burnt to a crisp, and the king was outside on a rock crying. He said, what did you do? You were supposed to extinguish this fire. He said, but king, it's not my fault. I know there was water right over here, but you said you didn't like that water. It's dirty. You wanted the terrific water, which is 3 miles down. I had to go. He said, listen, if there's a fire burning, any water will do. In a situation where things are calm and things are great, the best is all I want. But if there's a fire, burning, anything is better than nothing. So that's the message of a person who says, you know what, who am I? I can't accept a position of leadership. I can't compare myself to the people that were leaders, past presidents, past people involved in the community, in different roles and different leadership positions. Who am I? In a situation where there's no one, it's like there's a fire. And when there's the fire burning, any water will do. And if we wait and wait to get the water 3 miles down, there'll be nothing left. And therefore, this is the message that Shmuel was saying. You didn't need to have a melech, a king. You don't need it. Any person would have been better than having appointed a king. Because we're going to see the fact that we had a king caused tremendous rebellion. Tremendous rebellion in the kingship. Continue with the Radak. We look at the Radak still on this pasuk, then we'll move afterwards. The Radak tells us what exactly was Shmuel doing. So I underlined this about 7 lines down, quoting a Medrash Tehillim. Over Belezer Mishum Rabbi Yossi Ben Zimra, he says, Av Shmuel, also Shmuel Rabban Shel Nevi'im, who is the great leader of all the prophets. He's considered the rabbi of the prophets. Misnava v'lo yodea ma ha'i misnava. Even someone such as he was not as great as Moshe, who spoke face to face to God, but Shmuel was up there. But nonetheless, he sometimes, when he would prophesize, he didn't know what was coming out of his mouth. He had no idea what he was saying. Shnemar, because it says, V'yishlach Hashem es Yerubal v'yes Medan v'yes Yiftach v'yes Shmuel, which is the verse we read. And he was saying it, right? And he was speaking about all these prophets, and one of them was Shmuel himself. Now, unless you're Elmo that says, oh, hi, I'm Elmo, how are you doing? How's Elmo feeling? Which is kind of freaky. He doesn't say, how am I? You know, if you ever watch Elmo's World, you notice that. So for a person to speak in third person about themselves, it's kind of a tremendous statement that you're saying. You're quoting yourself, you're using your own name. So how could he be speaking that way? Oti lo amar. He doesn't say, and me, ela vishmuel. Lefi shulha yodea ma yuhayim esnave. Radak says that sometimes even the Nevi'im, they were just microphones that